Hello and welcome back to Classy Coders, the podcast where computer science educators and technology professionals come together to explore the present and future of computer science education. Today, we're bridging the gap between classrooms and careers, equipping the next generation for a tech-driven world. In this episode, we're diving into the creativity that blooms when students and teachers embrace computer science on their own terms. Our conversation continues with Denise Orndorff and Dora Palfy, who share inspiring stories of student-led innovation. From interactive makey-makey posters and pixel art lighting up the classroom, to a student-built virtual pet adoption center coded entirely with Imagi. But this episode isn't just about the wow moments, it's also about the real-world challenges teachers face when trying to bring computer science into the classroom. Denise and Dora offer honest reflections on time constraints, teacher hesitation, and the importance of subtle integration, strong relationships, and professional collaboration. Whether it's co-planning lessons, encouraging cross-grade teamwork, or simply starting small, they remind us that every step counts and every teacher can make an impact. If you're looking for ideas, encouragement, and real stories from the front lines of computer science education, you're in the right place. This is Classy Coders. I think I'm going to ask for more stories just because I think that they're a really powerful way of conveying the ideas that we talk about, especially in this podcast and as CodeVA as a whole. Do you have any memories or stories of creative projects that surprised you where a student took something in a totally unexpected direction?
I work on one project and it's not Imagi related. It goes with the Makey Makeys, if you're familiar with those or not. But with our fifth graders, we were able, writing we know is very difficult to get our students to do. But if they're writing for a purpose, sometimes that's enough of a motivator. So in fifth grade, they had to write a 5-paragraph essay. And they could pick their person that they wanted to write on. We didn't limit, okay, just these people or just these, you know, it was, they could choose whoever they wanted to. And we really got a big mixture of different people. Actually, I learned about a few people that I hadn't heard of before. But they had to write their 5-paragraph essay. Then they took 5 key points from their essay. We then took those 5 key points and they created an interactive poster using Makey Makey, which is the interactive app that Makey Makey has. Once again, you could just use the computer if you didn't have the Makey Makey kit to do the poster, that would work. We're lucky enough we had them, so we created the posters. They put images on there. We put brads for the buttons and connected all the alligator clips and all the wires, so we had wires running everywhere. And every student just embraced that project. They were like, are you coming in? Are we doing this today? Okay, I've got this picture, but it's not working right. You got to show me. Or I've recorded and the microphone's not working. Ended up making like little tutorial videos so that they could watch it on their free time. Because once again, their teacher was giving them the control, but they may not have had all the answers. So we had our list of tutorials. The day came for them to share with their book buddies. So we had their fifth graders. We had a group of second grade and a group of kindergarten that would come in. And we'd plug in headphones because it's a lot of noise if they didn't have their headphones on. And I look over and the one fifth grader is aware that one of the kindergartners is non-speaking English. Everything is Spanish. And I look over and she is pointing to the picture and translating everything in Spanish to him so that he understood what was going on that particular person's poster. And it was the sweetest moment ever. And it was one of those things you're like, okay, just another way that even our students have learned to adapt or differentiate so that everyone could have the opportunity to learn that day. And that was just for me as a teacher, an aha moment. That, you know, our kiddos can be teachers. They can lead the way. We just have to be able to give them that control and that creative outlet and a reason to be able to show off what they know. So we've actually worked on this project 2 years now. And every year, this year, you know, it was better than it was last year. And we live and learn through it all. But that moment when they were translating, it was just, it was an aha moment for a lot of us.
Well, that's precious. Dora, did you have any, did you think of one yet? Or if not, that's totally okay. I know that you're more on the you're the builder as opposed to the in the
No,
classroom
yeah.
person all the time, you know?
So actually, I got to visit so many classrooms, which is really incredible. Like I say, I have to, I get to be teacher for fun, which is like really nice. And you know, I've seen like one time I visited this school outside of New York City, and I think I got to meet this girl who like spent all week in creating this like massive art piece representing Jack Sparrow that she like put together many different Imagi projects to make this like big representation. And then this other student who was like coding different like Muppets characters, so kind of just like going in animation, which was like an infinitely long job to do. But so I see like incredible solutions in the classroom. Actually, like we're thinking about a way to be able to like see more of those, because I'm sure there's amazing projects out there. But the example I thought about, Imagi also has an app which can be used at home. So we have like hundreds of thousands of kids who've been coding, and there's a moderated community. So this community is made sure to be kept safe. But here, kids from around the world can actually like share their projects, and then we have something called like a remix feature. So you know, you can like remix someone else's code, but it's strictly like separate from the school product, just to make sure you know there is no no
Course.
risk for any students in schools. But an example I thought about from sort of this like global community, there's always so many like creative ideas, and recently we saw this project that won. One kiddo created, and so she came up with this story. She has often comes up with stories, but this specific one, she created an adoption center. So there were like different pets, and then other users could comment what pet they wanted to adopt, and then she
That's
would
cute.
like actually code an animation of that specific pet, and then she would be like keeping everyone updated, like this pet has now been adopted, and like what accessories have been coded. So you know, it wasn't just about actually coding, but like the amount of code she created was like insane. But you know, it was all about like the story and the community, and the kids coming together to adopt different pets.
That's
That's cool.
so precious again. Yeah, wow, what a cool thing.
It's just like the creativity, because you know, that's what you ask, like surprises you, like yes, all the time. I'm just always surprised by all the creative things that kids can come up with.
And that's with the creativity with Imagi. I mean, it really is up to the students. One way that I found in the beginning, which was an easy way to introduce what they were doing, was pixel art. And you know, creating something in a pixel art. And then I'll give them little pieces of paper that have the 81 little blocks, and they'll color. And now, okay, now we're going to code it. And then when they see their things come to life, it's like, oh, wow. Did you see? You know, I was telling Alan the other day, it's sort of like the little carrot. Like I get them to do all the coding, and then I sort of dangle the charm. Okay, now let's see it in action. And they're like, oh, do we get to keep these? Can I keep, you know? Well, you can keep it for a few days, but then you have to return it for the other kids to use. But for them to see something they've created that's their work, they've programmed to come to life and tangibly hold that in their hand is just fabulous. It's just, as a teacher, it's like, this is the reason that a lot of us are in education. All these little light bulbs that are going on and the learning that's going on when they don't even realize sometimes that they are learning in that moment. So.
That's awesome. I am I'm waiting for my full circle moment here at some point where they invent a Tamagotchi that I can create in pixel art, the little animal that I can then take care of as my 90s Tamagotchi, which was cruelly taken from me by a fourth or fifth grade teacher at some point. Rightfully so, for sure. I have no doubt they were in the right. However, the wound has yet to heal. But yeah, you know, so that's, you know, we'll see. One of
There
these
you go,
days
Dora.
we'll
You got
get
your
there.
next project from him.
Right.
Yes. Or some of the
If you're
students have to create
marketing, yeah, if you're marketing to 30-year-olds and up, then yes,
it.
that's a great product to start with. But if you're sticking with schools, I'm not sure if anyone under the age of 30 knows what a Tamagotchi is. But that's for a different podcast. Let's talk a little bit about the reality of the classroom. And Denise, you've already touched on this a little bit. And, you know, getting that teacher buy-in, Dora, you've mentioned it as well, you know, getting them to that, what was it, the positive reinforcement cycle, the dopamine hit as quickly as possible. I guess, do you have a story or a specific example of how you approach a conversation where a teacher says, that sounds cool, but I don't have time? You know, what do you say when you hear that? You probably hear it a lot. Or, you know, if there's a strategy that's helped you successfully lower the barrier to entry for teachers who are skeptical or overwhelmed, are there specific conversations that you've had and, you know, this is what worked and this is what didn't? Or is it a case by case thing? It might just be a case by case. But yeah, how do you approach situations where you're trying to convince a teacher?
It's a little bit of everything that you mentioned. I'm lucky enough that at least once every other month, sometimes every month, I have the opportunity, we call them Tech Tuesdays, where I can sit down with each grade level and have a designated amount of time to cover resources, to go over things. And they do have a lot on their plate. Like this year, our focus has been reading and math and trying to get everything integrated with the new standards, while a long CS is sort of hanging right here in the balance. So I always approach it as, you're already doing it. We're just going to add the word algorithm in there. You know, you're writing about how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That's a sequence. Something's not right in your writing. We're going to debug it. We're going to give it a new term. I think a lot of times things are occurring in the classroom and the integration is occurring in the classroom, but it's not looked at computers as a computer science thing. A lot of teachers, when they hear computer science, they're like, oh, well, they just need a computer lab teacher to teach them all that. And that's not the focus that we want. We want it to be integrated within the curriculum. And I think a lot is occurring. I just have to feed them the right little nugget at the right time to say, hey, you're doing this, or you're so close. Let me come in and demo a lesson with you. We'll co-plan a lesson together. It gets my foot in the door. The kids get to see me, which doesn't always happen. You know, in some of the schools, it's hard to get in and see all of your students. But for me, a large portion of getting the integration to occur is that relationship with my teachers, that they feel comfortable with me coming in. They feel comfortable with the material that I'm presenting to them to use in their teaching. But I just always try to just squeeze it in, you know, wherever you can. And there are some teachers that it is teacher by teacher basis. I mean, you know, I'm sure some people are listening to this podcast, they're like, oh, well, there is no way that Mr. Jones would ever do XYZ. I mean, right now we can probably all think of one person in our head. But if you build that relationship and you get that connection with them, it usually makes a difference getting your foot in the door and being able to help them along, change their mindset and get the students rolling with computer science.
I think so on like my perspective and how I get to work with educators, you know, oftentimes we work with wonderful instructional tech coaches like Denise. So we work together on how Imagi works, or like, should we do a PD, or how can we integrate it, or maybe chat about that, and then they will take it to to the educators. The way how Imagi's platform works, so hold that thought.
No worries. The lights in Dora's room keep auto dimming to save energy.
It's strange. Yeah,
it's a very farcical little happening that we've got going on the podcast. So please continue, Dora.
I'm sure we can edit that part out, right?
Oh yeah. I might keep one in just because it's fun.
Just for fun.
I'll edit the others out. Yeah.
Okay. Great. So where was I? Yes. Teachers. Yes. So the way how Imagi's tool works, so we have Imagi EG, which is our platform where the actual coding happens. And like you mentioned before, of course, to like lower the barrier to access, like the Imagi Charm is optional. And teachers can sign up for free to Imagi EDU and explore it, start using it, get access to some of the curriculum. So we get a whole lot of educators who like use it because other teachers told them about it. So of course, I think, you know, when it comes to teachers learning about tools, that's probably one of the best ways, educators recommending to other educators. And then like just one other like story or district I just thought about. They are up in Massachusetts where we had one educator who heard about Imagi from some other educators, but she was really scared about it. She's like, I can't do Python. Like, I don't know if I can do this. So she, instead of like, you know, trying to figure out, she just convinced her supervisor to invite us for PD. So that, you know, she could get the PD, but then her colleagues also got the PD and then kind of like, you know, spread that way. And of course, you know, some of them were more like ready to implement it right away. Some of them needed some more support. But I think, you know, kind of like that community aspect, that like teacher to teacher support is probably like one of the best ways because, you know, that's coming from a trusting place.
Yeah. Teachers supporting teachers is, yeah, another really big theme that we've encountered in the podcast a couple, at least especially last episode. And then this is sort of touching on a theme that they mentioned last episode, and I'd love to get both of your opinions on it, and how education and especially teachers get a little bit more siloed as they, not as they progress, but like a sixth and seventh and eighth grade teacher is teaching a specific subject. They're not a fifth grade, fourth grade, third, second, first teacher who is teaching all subjects. They're dealing with maybe one or two classes of kids. They get to really get to know those kids. But as we get further into middle school and then especially even high school, even further into higher education, college, graduate school, things like that, these teachers become high, you know, experts in one subject matter. And have either of you experienced, you know, sort of that difficulty where there's less collaboration in a middle school or high school level between teachers, where they're not sharing resources as much because a science teacher isn't going to share their resources with a math teacher because why would they? And so from a computer science standpoint, we know and understand that integration across subjects is the best way to utilize computer science. You know, something that tracking weather through a micro bit or something like that incorporates data and science, you know, and then also math. You know, those things are just built in. And then, you know, if you want to include art with data visualization, things like that. Is there a difference when you're talking to middle school administrators or middle school teachers or high school teachers versus elementary school teachers that you've found, and that like the arguments are a little different for you when you're trying to convince them that this isn't, you know, you don't have to learn Python, you know, in order to do this, or is it always just sort of case by case, depending on the school, depending on the district, depending on, and this, I guess this question might be more for you, Dora, but I guess Denise, I'm not sure which, I don't know if I asked which grade level specifically you help and support. So, is it K through five?
K-5 is one building that I'm at, but my other one is a more specialty building. So it's actually pre-K through 12. So I have about 100 little preschoolers in the one, and then a kindergarten through 12th grade program. And they're the ones that have been using Imagi more so than the elementary group. And for me personally, we're such a small school, like each grade, each school itself is like, we only have two middle school teachers and three high school teachers. So when we meet, the conversation is everyone at the table. So my circumstances are just a little bit different, but when we're there, you know, you can say, okay, you're doing this for, and I'll go back to the makey makeys, cause that's how it originally started for me. Fourth grade, you're doing electricity. So let's talk about open and closed circuits. Okay, well, let's talk about what conducts and what doesn't conduct. And then all of a sudden we're pulling in the Makey Makey project, and then we're building the interactive poster, and now they know they can use it to do X, Y, and Z. And my hope as we move forward in a division is the things that I've worked on with third, fourth, and fifth, as they get to middle school, they can say, hey, we'd use these Makey Makeys to do X, Y, and Z. Or we used Imagi to do this. Now can we take it and do this? So maybe the students are going to be the ones, it's going to be the ones coming and saying, hey, have you tried this? And have those conversations. But I'm lucky enough at both of my buildings that I get to meet with all the stakeholders at the table when we discuss projects. So.
Yeah, that's a great argument for, especially when talking about integrating computer science or things like that, bringing as many people to the table as possible. Because even in a larger middle school, if we get, all of science and math together, all of art and English language studies together, if we even just like do two at a time, two groups at a time, or three subjects at a time, there might be a greater opportunity for them to understand the overlap between certain things and how, yeah, we're learning this new tool, we're learning how to use this new thing, but all of us could teach this, we could teach this math standard, this science standard, and this English standard all together in one big group project that is, self-started by students, engages their curiosity, and has this one specific tool, like the Imagi Charm or something like that. I find that really interesting to hear, just because that's happening at a small school, but how could that same model be applied elsewhere? I think that there's a lot of opportunity for that. So any educators listening, there's a great idea.
I think, and I mean, especially in the context of Virginia, right, where computer science, at least in middle school, is supposed to be taught in a multidisciplinary manner, like this is really important. I think like another factor is also the size of the district, because oftentimes, if you have like multiple middle schools, then maybe those specific like tech coaches or computer science teachers or STEM teachers will like collaborate or like share resources between the schools or like in larger districts. I think that happens a lot. But then I think when it comes to like computer science and like we work with a lot of like smaller schools or independent schools as well. And there might be even like a K through eight like computer science specialist. That's it. I think this is where kind of like professional organizations become so important. So like your CSTA and I guess like Code Virginia, because that's where then you can go to your local conference or even like online gatherings throughout the year and like share best practices. So I think like, yeah, when I think of teacher to teacher recommendation, it's not necessarily just like in your building, it's just like your professional network within your expertise. So I think that's why it is a really big value in these organizations existing as well.
Yeah, wow, that's, I mean, yeah, what an interesting other, like, sort of other network to think about when interpreting, when understanding the computer science education landscape. Because, I mean, it's fascinating to continually talk to professionals, either, like professional developers who that's just their job, people in the educational technology space like you, Dora, people who are at, at the schools like you, Denise. There is this sort of through line of like, we need to share more. We need to talk to each other more. Like, the more that we share, the more that we talk, the better we all get, because it's all the nature of computer science is you're constantly figuring it out. You're constantly encountering problems. You're constantly learning something, learning some new platform, learning some new device. The software updated, and now this key command doesn't work the same that it used to, or something like, I mean, there's, endless possibilities for things to, pop up, go wrong, or go sideways. And then there's also endless possibilities for new projects, new ways to imagine how to use these devices. And so there's this collaboration for, debugging and problem solving, but then there's this also wonderful creative collaboration that also mirrors, again, this is a theme that we've talked about in la past episodes, of the lifelong learner and then the self-starter energy that you have to be in computer science is transitions into adulthood from a professional standpoint. And it's, if you continue along this path, it's just sort of something that you've got to get used to. You got to talk to people, you got to solve problems, you're going to encounter obstacles, and then the more that you talk and the more that you interact with people, the easier life gets, in my opinion, especially when it comes to computer science.
When you talk about professional organizations, for Virginia, we have VISTE, which has been vital for me for 15, 17 so years now as being a tech coach. I mean, that's my PD, that's my people I go to. I'm also a member and president of SVETC, which is the Shenandoah Valley Consortium for EdTech Collaboration. And we actually finally had a face-to-face meeting in March, and it was great because Code VA was there and talked about things that we could use for computer science, and then we just sort of had a round robin, and one of us had hummingbirds set up, and one of us had Makey Makeys and BeeBots and podcasting, and it was the things that the projects that we're doing in our building. But I'm in Frederick County, and if you're in Rockingham County, like we need to see what others are doing. So it was the purposeful planned event where we had that opportunity to share with one another. And those moments, especially as a tech coach, those are the moments that I need in order to be inspired and go back and work with my teachers to get them inspired.
Wow. That's really nice. That's really, yeah. I think that there's a lot more opportunity to do events like that, especially. I think there's a lot of focus on the sort of conference, going to listening to talks, and this sort of like, I can get information from this one source and it's probably going to help me. You know, I've chosen to go to this talk at whatever conference I'm going to, but I'm curious more now about that sort of round robin, you know, smaller groups. Just let's just everybody bring their favorite, you know, lesson or tool that they use and just show us how you use it. Yep. You know, like let's just talk about it and be open and collaborative in our sharing. Because the more I learn, you know, from a sort of outside perspective, I have a coding background and I have a general interest. I worked, you know, I worked at Apple for 5 years in their IT desk. And so like, I've been around the block, but the more I learn, especially about the education technology space, is just like the sense of collaboration that educators have is so invaluable. It's so amazing.
And it's really the only way we can stay up to date on things, because things are changing, programs change. So it's really the only one way that, you know, by us sharing, oh, did you know it could do this now? No, I didn't know. And all of a sudden, you know, you have that collaboration going on. And as much as I love the fact that I can hop on a Google Meet and have a meeting, I still absolutely love when we're face-to-face all in the same room talking too. So that was a nice atmosphere to have our last meeting when it was face-to-face too. It was just to get back to the socialization and back to your people and learn from them.
Yeah, I think the pandemic taught us all that face-to-face, in-person interaction is a human necessity. Yes. And none of us should take it for granted. Thank goodness for that, I guess. That's a really, really interesting point, and especially that's something that it will take back to the Code Virginia team as we start planning out conferences and planning out, you know, like how we engage with our audience specifically from a statewide standpoint, because, you know, we host regional events and we host, you know, some fundraisers and things like that. And we do professional development for districts or schools, but that's, you know, on a very individualized basis. But I think that there's a lot of room to create that cross collaboration, you know, in person experience. And maybe that's something that, you know, is a really good form of PD. It's like, we're not sure what you're going to learn. Just come, you know, come to teach us something, and everybody's going to, it's a potluck of learning. You
sort
know,
of like what back a fun, to the old days of ed camp days. You walk and you don't know what you're going to get, but you leave with ideas. So I don't know if you've ever done an ed camp before, Alan, or not. So
no.
Basically, you show up. Great, though. It's an unconference. There's no planning involved. Everyone shows up. You put post-it notes up of things you want to learn, and they sort of categorize them. And if you want to talk about this, go here. And if you get in there and it's not what you want, you let your feet do the walking, and you go to another one, and you learn from. So that's just how the ed camp was set up. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. That sounds like my favorite thing in the whole world. I am an improviser by trade. So the idea of like showing up somewhere and I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen, is just, that's my energy. That's awesome.
She's going to turn the lights back on. The lights again. Oh, we should have timed it. Is it 20 minutes?
It's fourth time. 20 minutes. I think it's 15.
15. Is it? Yeah, that's very short.
I think that's the fourth time, and we're at about an hour of recording. So yeah, that's about right. Any last thoughts? I did want to just ask this one thing. If there is one sort of first step or first thing that you would encourage any educator who's listening to this to do, if they're scared of, you know, engaging with computer science curriculum, if they're scared of engaging with a new tool that they maybe heard of, interested in, but we're like, can't, that's too heavy of a lift. If there was one piece of advice that you could give those people, what would that be?
Only one. That's the
if
hard
you've got more, that's fine, but you know.
I know for me and in my position as a tech coach, it's just starting small. Build your relationship and then just start small. It's one little thing. Maybe take one math lesson and let's talk about the algorithm of solving a problem. You've included computer science. If you have a tech coach or instructional coach in your building, let them be your friend. Go to them. They're a source of resources. And it may not be as fearful as you think it may be. But just take your time, dip your toes in it, and start small. It doesn't have to be anything big and elaborate. Small steps make great strides in the end. So
I think I can really much. I can really just second what Denise said about like starting small. I think that's one of the most important things. And I think what we have alluded to so many times already is kind of like having this mentality of like errors are our friends. You know, there's no such thing as like sort of failing because it's never going to work on the first time. So it's almost like it's going to remove the pressure if you like hear this and know this, that like in computer science, it's very unlikely that, you know, things will work on the first trial, on the first go. It's all about the process of like figuring it out. So, you know, think of it more as like an investigative process. And that process is what we're meant to be doing. And so I think, you know, just like understanding that it's not about, yeah, perfection, perfect execution. It's really more about the journey. So yeah, just starting small and you know, knowing that actually mistakes and sort of failing is what you're worth thriving for.
That's great. Those are very, very easily integrated together as pieces of advice. Start small and go slow and don't get bogged down by the fact that it might not work perfectly the first time, that it won't work perfectly the first time. Again, building that inherent fact into it is just so important, especially for young kids developing that emotional resiliency. You know, it's easier for some kids than others, but I think it's really, really powerful, especially when they get to that final result where it does work, and you just get to see them light up and get so excited that their art shows up on this little device. So yeah, that's great advice. Really, really, really good. Journey before destination. For all my Brandon Sanderson fans out there. Totally different podcast. Thank you so much for being on Classy Coders. I hope that you both have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you again.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you for having us.
That's it for this episode of Classy Coders. A huge thank you to Denise Orndorff and Dora Palfi for showing us how student creativity and teacher collaboration can make computer science more meaningful and accessible for everyone. But we're not stopping here. In our next episode, we're taking things a step further. Joining the conversation, we have a data mining consultant with insight into how data shapes business outcomes and a lab school director who's pioneering integration of computer science across middle school learning. From classroom implementation to big picture system change, we'll explore what it really takes to be a computer science professional in today's rapidly evolving landscape. You won't want to miss it. Until then, keep creating, keep coding, and keep reimagining what's possible in computer science education. This is Classy Coders.